Well, congratulations. We all made it through the weekend, and look, we're all here. Daddy got a new hair, did. I decided to go with the $19.99 instead of the $6.99. Can anybody tell the difference? Does it look a little better with the upgrade, the $10 upgrade? You're not saying yes. Brian?
Well, I think you have a little spike from wearing your headphones. So
no, that spike's supposed to be there. That's my special spike.
It's a little faux hawk?
Yes, a little faux hawk.
You should start playing soccer.
Hey, here's the fun part because they made it short. Notice that. Look at my dome there, my little circle thing there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so proud of that. Now tell everybody what you see.
I don't know.
Bald spot.
Yes, you see hair. Oh, thank you.
I was going to say.
Thank you, Jesus.
Any hair product in there?
There's no hair product in there whatsoever.
Well, it's just good jeans,
and
right?
Let's open the door and yell at him. Calling me helmet head last week. Cheap ass. Hey, Franklin. Did you notice my new haircut? I upgraded from $6.99 to $19.99. Does it look better to you now?
Did you pet the guy's dog that cut it?
No, it was a girl and I didn't pet her cat, no.
And he was
blind. What are you talking about? This is I got the little faux hawk. Yes, Heather.
Definitely a 1999 haircut.
In 1999?
No, you look like you're 12 years
old. $19.99.
Price-wise.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant...
No, well, you look like a million, so that was a bargain.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know, compare... It does. It looks like a $50 haircut. The rest of you, however, looks like about $9.99.
So that's enough of you. Get out of here now. All right, yeah, go shave your head. All right. How much fun was that? He was calling me helmet. What else did he say about me last week? He goes, is that like a bad hairpiece or what? Dude, it's all there. I'm only just going to go gray.
How rude, as Stephanie would say on Fuller House.
All right, I want to play some fun from the... Listen, this is the time of the year when all parents are freaking out about their kids going to college, getting the scholarships, getting their kids off on the right foot, all of that. I've got a great guest. His name is Jeff Salingo, and he has a best-selling book, There Is Life After College, and he's going to be fantastic. So if you have scholarship questions, like my family went crazy with all of this stuff, stand by. He's going to help. All right, so while I have some time here, I'll get back to all of the fun things that were the correspondence dinner, but just some of the best stuff. It went down Saturday night, and here is Obama on stage making some jokes about Biden.
I love Joe Biden. I really do. I want to thank him for his friendship, for his counsel, for always giving it to me straight, for not shooting anybody in the face.
That's so great.
Kendall Jenner that? is also here. I'm not exactly sure what she does, but I am told that my Twitter mentions are about to go through the roof. My approval ratings keep going up. The last time I was this high, I was trying to decide on my major. Bernie, you look like $1 million. Or to put it in terms you'll understand, you look like 37,000 donations of $27 each.
He's just
with that,
killing it.
I just have two more words to say. Obama out.
Mic drop. Peace out. Yo. A couple things there. Don't you love the joke? I mean, if it flew over your head, you know, the vice presidential
I
thing.
Love Joe Biden. I really do. I want to thank him for his friendship, for his counsel, for always giving it to me straight, for not shooting anybody in the face.
That's a reference to Dickless Cheney. Remember when Dickless Cheney was the vice president and he shot some dude in the face when he went duck hunting?
That had to hurt.
And then this past year, while Ted Snooze Cruz was campaigning, where's Duck Dynasty filmed?
Louisiana, right?
No, it's down there in the South. It's good old boy South. Whatever. Right. It doesn't make any difference. But, so he was trying to pander to that crowd with the Duck Dynasty thing. So Ted Cruz came out, with his duck hunting outfit and shotgun slung over his back. And I was thinking to myself when I saw it, I was thinking, is this a good idea? When it was just a couple years ago, somebody from your own party who was the vice president blew somebody's face off. And when was the last time you went duck hunting? I mean, I know you caught a Carly, but that didn't work out. She fell through the floor on Saturday. Did you know that? God bless her heart, she didn't get hurt. But they were pulling the same garbage. She was, you know, Giselle on stage, she says,
"And now, ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States of America."
And here comes Ted and family. And whoops, Carly fell right off the stage.
Right through the trap door.
And nobody even winced. She just disappeared.
Maybe it was,
What the hell?
Maybe that was by design.
I don't know. Yes. It's just like what Trump did with Palin. Next president. Thank you. Goodbye. Get out. Get out. It's just, dude, you have to see the video. It's just terrible. Now, she didn't get hurt, so I'm really happy about that. I'm not a mean person. But it's just like, and now the president's president. You know, it's just, but the whole thing, the whole premise is ridiculous anyway. They're not going to be the president or vice president of anything.
Yeah, there's absolutely, you know, maybe no
in a,
chance.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in a Hotel 6 or something. I don't know. But not the president of the United States, okay? Or vice president. And she just disappeared. You have to watch the video. It's kind of funny, Carly, since we know that she didn't get hurt. Okay, let's play some more.
Must be a slow news day. I saw them playing on CNN earlier.
It is a slow news cycle, but it's a fun day because Donald Trump's supporters got in Ted Cruz's face, and Ted Cruz tried to stand there and have a conversation with them, and they did, politely, believe it or not, but the guy just ravaged Cruz.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. And then he went to speaking. Ted Cruz, he's gone to speaking again.
Oh, no.
And some 10-year-old kid in the back of the auditorium said, "You suck!" And they had to carry him out. They had to carry the kid out. And then he made some reference that he'd spank. Do you have the spank? I'm going to spank you. Yeah, play that. This is what Ted Cruz said about the 10-year-old. Or I guess he was 10.
Do that. All right, apparently there's a young man who's having some problems.
Whatever you say.
Thank you, son. Children should actually speak with respect. Imagine what a different world it would be if someone had told Donald Trump that years ago. You know, in my household, when a child behaves that way, they get a spanking.
Yay! Go beat their ass! And then shoot your friend in the face while you're duck hunting.
You know, the last time I did duck hunting was when I had a Nintendo. Remember Duck Hunt?
I played that. I was good at it.
Oh, I was awful.
But I didn't take anybody's face off.
No.
No.
No, it's designed to be safe.
Now, I know I was off my face and off my hat when I was doing it. Oh, remember bowling, too? Yes. It was a strike.
Those games are so much fun.
Unlike Wrigley Field, that was no strike when I threw that. That was a mess. Oh, somebody did that over the weekend. Warren G. He messed up... This is sacred, people. Now, come on, after 14 years in Chicago, you know, if you get to sing at Wrigley, you don't screw it up. And so he was doing the seventh inning stretch.
Cubby fans, mount up! A 1, 2, 3! Take me to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
No.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
He blew it. Can I say?
He wasn't all that horrible in his defense.
It wasn't that horrible.
It could have been worse.
Yes, there have been a lot of drunk people up there, but they were famous, and hey, that's all part of the... What an experience. That was my favorite. Throwing out the first pitch, never again. Singing the seventh inning stretch, happy to do it anytime. Love that. All right, where were we with the White House Correspondents' Dinner? What else do I have time to play here? Obama talks about why Trump didn't show up.
You got a room full of reporters, celebrities, cameras, and he says no. Is this dinner too tacky for the Donald? What could he possibly be doing instead? Is he at home eating a Trump steak? tweeting out insults to Angela Merkel? What's he doing?
Those are things that are on their way. It's really scary, isn't it? Because I truly think it's possible.
He can't win.
He can win.
No way.
Sorry. You know, me and all my liberal friends just want to, we're just in this, you know, we're in this cloud where we say, look, it's just never going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. I am your friend, too. That man's going to win. That man is going to win. There's too many angry white people.
No.
Yes, there are. I have to put up with this next week in Pennsylvania. People, I'm going to Pennsylvania to see my family next week. I'm going to have to listen to Fox News at the same decibel as a 747 taking off for 7 solid days.
Good luck with that. That's some vacation, by the way.
I know. I love you, Mom and Dad. I can't wait to see you. I'll be spending a lot of time outside, so let's pray for some sunshine.
And drinking heavily.
And drinking heavily. I know, well, you know, since my stomach thing, I can't drink heavily. I might be able to test drive it there a little bit.
Well, that's good.
Drink lightly.
Yeah, yeah.
See nothing
how it
else.
Goes.
You can't say anything about anything else. Nothing else is
your liver
over
still
there.
Works, right?
My liver, of all the things you would think through all the years, because one of the things when I had a perforated duodenal, and it almost killed me, it went septic. But of all the things while they're in there taking you apart, they're, of course, checking for cancer and they're looking at your kidneys and your liver and your heart. Yes, all of those, I get a 10.
So, all right. Good yeah, for so you.
Yes.
It's like a.
Just, yeah, all right. Everybody's
like the
saying,
liver
have a drink.
Of a teenager.
I don't know how that happened. Wasn't like it wasn't used. All right, let's take a break. When we come back. We're going to get to life after college. We're going to get a little serious here because, as I swear, we went through this so much with our family trying to find scholarships and how to handle the whole college thing. And I know if you're a parent, if you're a college age kid, or if you're the parent thereof and they're on their way, well, my God, I bet you have lots of questions. We've got the answers coming up next with Jeff Salingo on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham. Well, it is that time of year, especially if you have a college-bound student or you are one. Because, I know, the whole jitters thing. Oh, where are we going to get the money? How's this going to work? Are they going to get this done? Are they going to get it right? And then your child, him or herself, is also filled with anxiety. Am I making the right decision? Should I be doing this? What about that scholarship? What about this scholarship? And I welcome my guest, and his name is Jeff Salingo. Jeff Salingo, right?
Yes, you got it.
Okay, and you are the author of There Is Life After College. So I want to start right away with you. I mean, back in the day, the bachelor's degree was everything, but I don't think that's really the way you see it nowadays, do you?
No, I mean, the bachelor's degree has a lot of noise around it. If you think of it as a signal of job preparedness, it used to be that it was really kind of a golden ticket to a job, and now it really is an admission ticket to any job. But to get those higher level jobs, especially ones that require that get more salary, it's a lot more about what you do when you're getting that degree than just the fact that you got the degree.
I know. And isn't it interesting? And it's really unfortunate now, all the stories you hear today about underemployment with those millennials who have come out from the college scene. They're straddled. They're living at home with their parents or they're working as bartenders, baristas, whatever the case may be. But yet they could have their bachelor's or master's.
They could. And, almost 50% of today's college graduates are underemployed, meaning they're in jobs that don't require a bachelor's a degree. And so it's a big problem, and especially for students who have a lot of debt coming out of college. What ends up happening is they have a lot less flexibility, and so they end up taking any job, including being baristas or nannies or other things that don't require a bachelor's degree. And they say, I'll take this job for 6 months to a year, and 1 year turns into 2 years, turns into 3 years, and suddenly now they're competing with a whole new crop of college graduates.
And his name, Jeff's book is Jeff Salingo, There Is Life After College. So I have to ask you, and you talk about how important it is, you know, as to where you go to college, how important it is how you do college, how you go to college. Talk about the difference.
Yeah, so I actually did a survey for the book. We did a survey, a nationally representative sample of about 800 people in their mid-20s, and we wanted to find out what did they do in the last 8-10 years before they turned their mid-20s that led to where they are today. And one of the we noticed a couple of things. One of them was this thing about debt that I mentioned earlier. The more debt somebody had coming out of college, the less flexibility they had in taking a job that might be good for their career and moving. They ended up taking a job just because it paid. And the more it paid, the better off they felt they were. So that's one big thing, and that's how somebody goes to college and how they're financing it. The other big thing was that in terms of an internship, hands-on learning. The more internships that somebody had, the more likely they were to be employed not only in their field, but after graduation, but the more likely they were to be employed in a job very quickly after graduation, largely because increasingly companies, large and small, are hiring mostly from their intern pools. For example, you know, Facebook, and I mean to just use a Silicon Valley example, but they're very much like other companies. They found out that their most successful employees, it didn't matter where they went to college, it didn't matter what their GPA or major was. The number one predictor of success at Facebook was, did they intern there? And a lot of other companies have found this out as well. They want to kind of try before they buy. And so thus they're hiring students from their intern pools.
And I'm hearing this over and over again when I talk to experts such as yourself that, you know, that really is get the foot in the door. And I like what you say about start looking in your freshman year. Don't wait till the second semester of your senior year. That's the wrong way to be doing it.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You really kind of have to think about what you want to do that as soon as you get on campus. It's kind of a shame in some ways. You know, college used to be a place where you could explore.
Right, and
you know,
learn.
Try out some
right.
majors, take some courses and learn. But you know, college has become a lot more expensive. And thus, as a result, you really kind of need to decide pretty early on what you're gonna major in. You could switch majors, but the more you switch, the more you wander through college, the more likely you are to wander after college.
I had someone in here earlier last weekend, you know, the whole live to work thing. She wanted to thinks it should be changed, you know, not live to work, but work to live. And that seems to be the change in the mindset of the millennials that, you know, they are not going to be stuck to one corporate program. Plus, the gig economy is such an important thing to them. And they look at things differently.
Well, there's no doubt about it. They look at things differently, and they're also part of not only the gig economy, but they're part of a new economy that's going to require that they get training and education throughout their lives. This idea that you go to college at the age of 18, you spend 4 years there, you graduate, maybe you go on to graduate school, and you basically wrap up the bulk of your education at the age of 25, 26, 27, or whatever it might be, those days are over. And the fact of the matter is, given the changes in the economy, given how the number of industries are coming and going at such an alarming rate, you're going to need to get education in your 20s, in your 30s, your 40s. So they're really going to be part of a first generation of college graduates where lifelong learning is not just rhetoric, but it's really reality.
I have to ask you, because I have so many friends that are just turning into their 50s now, and they're saying, oh, my God, Drex, we're just this whole thing, where are we going to come up with the money, scares the hell out of us to educate our kid or kids.
No doubt about it. And one of the things that worries me is the number of parents in their 50s who are taking on a pretty tremendous amount of debt.
I know, right?
To finance the dreams of their sons and daughters when they're only themselves like 10, 15, 20 years from retirement. I mean, the thing is that, you know, college graduates over time do much better economically than students who don't go to college. Now, that's always been true throughout history. We don't know if that's going to be true in the future, but let's assume that. So it's much better. I'm not a big fan of huge debt, as I talked about earlier, but it's much better actually for your 20-something-year-old son or daughter, or even your late teenage son or daughter, to take on the debt rather than you as the parent. Because the more debt you take on as the parent, it's going to limit your options for retirement.
I'm so glad that you said that, and I'm hearing a collective sigh throughout the Bay and all over the Western United States as the sun goes down on KGO. Because parents, we were just having this conversation. I knew you were going to come on this week. I wasn't sure it was today, but I had this conversation, and there was an argument with the group of the six of us. It's like, no, it's your kid's problem. I mean, you've helped them all their lives. They've got to take on the debt. But yes, it's so expensive. It's insane. And then the conversation was, well, but they didn't get the right scholarships, and they've been very lackadaisical about trying to get scholarships. And then the other people say, you know what, it's worth my investment so that when they need to change my bedpan, they'll be there. I don't know. I guess a little all of it is right or wrong.
Well, is it worth the investment? I think it depends on where you go, and not all schools are created equal. You know, if it's going to be a better institution, perhaps it's worth it. But you know, people in their late teens and early 20s need to have some skin in the game. There are multiple options for students, including starting at a community college and then transferring to a 4-year college. You don't have to go. You know, I was at a luncheon today, and some father was complaining about somebody he knows who's $200,000 in debt. And yes. I laughed, and I said, well, that's a pretty bad – whoever made that decision did not make a good one. First of all, it's almost impossible as an undergraduate to go in $200,000 in debt. So I started questioning him on this, and he realized that, you know, perhaps he got not the full story from a friend who was telling him this. But I think that we have to be realistic and not and really kind of control the emotions of people in their late teens and early 20s about where they want to go.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Jeff Silingo, and he is the author of There Is Life After College. This is a must-have if you're a parent. I mean, honest to God, or if you're college-bound. Because all the answers are there. And I'm not just saying this because it was just, when I brought this up on Saturday night, it was just a yak fest. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because who can't relate to this? All right, Jeff, when I come back, I want to ask you about the difference between your three groups. You kind of classify them in things in three groups. And what about the gap year? And what about just getting a trade? These are all questions that people want answers to. We'll continue on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
KGO. This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
We are talking about college education on the top of a lot of parents and students' minds. There Is Life After College is the name of the book. It's a must-have if you are going to college or you have children who are about to go. Jeff Silingo answers all the questions. All the questions that you need to have answered. Now, I find it very interesting, as of just a few hours ago, Malia, President Obama, Michelle Obama's daughter, she is taking a leap year before going to Harvard. What do you think about gap years? I said leap, I meant gap.
And in fact,
yeah.
I talk about it in the book, a whole chapter dedicated to the benefits of a detour. I mean, too many students are on the conveyor belt of college conveyor belt of education. And 3 months after high school graduation, 70% of students go right on to college, but only 50% of them complete a degree in 4 years. Many of them drop out and never go back. And many of them, others, just take 5, 6, 7 years to graduate. And I would imagine that if they took more of that time exploring before college, trying to figure out what they actually want to do, and we know this from research, that those people who do take a gap year and go back a year later or go to college a year later, they go there more mature, they go there more focused, their grades are higher, they don't take as much part in high-risk behavior, and they're just much more serious about what they want to do.
That's really good. That's powerful because that goes against what I think is the instant think in a lot of people's mind, even my own. Oh, hell no, you're going because no. If you don't go, I know you're never going to go because I do.
Well, and I think that's what most parents think, right?
Right.
They think,
yes.
Well, if you don't go now, you're not going to go. And again, as long as it's a year or less, and as long as you're doing something substantial during that year, in other words, you shouldn't just like sleep in your childhood bedroom and never do anything. You know, it's not a year off. You're actually doing something. Now, you know, the Obamas didn't announce what Malia is doing, but I'm assuming she'll do what a lot of people do on gap year. They do like AmeriCorps, they do national service, they go overseas
and
do
good.
Service work there, or yes. There's some sort of other academic or work component to it. So you're actually doing something. And you're exploring, and we're at our lowest level ever of teenage employment in this country since the 1940s, since we started measuring it. Teenagers are not working. Some of them can't find jobs. Others just are just too busy doing a billion other things. Taking that year and kind of reflecting on who you are and what you're doing, but more important, doing something besides just going to school, I think really will help you when you go to college.
I think two things are in play here when you mentioned the lowest level of unemployment for this demographic. Two things happened. First of all, the recession happened of 2008, and a lot of those jobs went away and went to, I don't know, people in their 40s and 50s or senior citizens who had to make ends meet, and they hired them and they kicked them out of the market. Now that has turned, but it's never really came back to even nearly what it was. So that I think there's a different mindset now with this 18 to 24 year old demo.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that I learned is that, you know, you talk to employers of new college graduates today, and they're shocked to learn that, you know, sometimes this might be the first job that somebody has held ever in their life when they come out of college. And so they just can't navigate the ambiguity of work. They're used to somebody else directing everything for them, giving them a list of tasks to do like you have in school. And then they get into the workforce and they're just not used to that, unlike previous generations who, you know, had to flip burgers at McDonald's or fold clothes at the Gap.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
They're just not used to it.
Jeff Selingo, let me ask you about this, because scholarships are such a big one and need, and a lot of times parents don't know where to go to look for them because they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. By the way, I don't think parents should be the ones looking for them. It should be the students looking for them. You know, parents do too much for kids today. You've heard of the term helicopter parent. There's also
Indeed.
The term snowplow parent, snowplow meaning, pushing the snow out of the way of their kids. So many students have trouble navigating not only college, but life after college. And a lot of that is because somebody else navigated life for them. So start it early. Start giving your son or daughter responsibility, including figuring out how they're going to fund their education.
Now, you group a lot of your things into three different groups. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, we did this survey of 20-somethings for the book and try to figure out how people launch into their 20s. And we figured they launch into their 20s in one of three ways. They're either sprinters, meaning they move right into their careers or right into graduate school. They're wanderers, where they take half of their 20s to get going, or they're stragglers and take most of their 20s. They were really a third, a third, and a third. So two-thirds of students are either wanderers or stragglers, where they take half of all of their 20s. To get going. And again, as I said earlier, the big differences between those groups, internships, the more internships you had, the more likely you were to be among the sprinters. The more debt you had, the more likely you were to be among the wanderers and the stragglers. And the other big piece here is just getting a credential. Most of the stragglers had a lot of credit, but no credential. In other words, they dropped out. They didn't finish school. So having a credential is critical. Nobody ever says in a job ad, we want some college credit. They say they want a degree.
Right. And back to the internship, because I look back on my 30-year of a major market radio career, and I can't tell you how many interns I got jobs. And, you know, now, which is really funny because I mentioned the 30-year thing, I have some of these people that answered the phones for me who are now general managers.
Yep.
And I love to call and give them a hard time. It's like, hey, you know, I want a gig. Well, dude, what? You're still Joe B to me, dude. Yes. You answered my phones. No, but it's a funny thing.
I think you talk about the power of the network.
Yes,
right?
Yes, indeed.
People you get to know, not only in college, but on your internships, will help you for the rest of your life.
Oh, it is. Isn't that amazing? But it just goes to show how time flies. And you know, you were interning or mentoring somebody, and in the wink of an eye, there they are running a corporation. It's fine.
No,
it feels good.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it really does feel good. And so let me see here. Some of the other things that I wanted to ask you about is what do you think the government should be doing to help college students? Because we hear, what Bernie wants. Bernie wants to make it all free and a handout. But somewhere in the middle, where how do you see things floating?
Well, I think that for one thing, that the government needs to crack down on institutions around the cost of higher education. You know, higher education is a personnel-intensive operation, but there's no reason that it should be increasing beyond the cost of inflation every year. So the government really has a role in this. They subsidize institutions heavily, so they could basically – penalize institutions that raise their prices too much. So that's one thing they could do. The second thing they could do is really help students in terms of loans and grants, and encourage states to invest more in their public university systems. I mean, the biggest problem we really have now in this country is 80% of American students go to public universities. The prices there have skyrocketed, especially since the recession of 2008, because states basically said, you know what, we have to pay for Medicare, we have to pay for all these other efforts. You have something called tuition universities, raise it, and we're going to take money away from you. And states have really backed out of their commitment to higher education. I think that if students pay, the federal government pays, the states pay, it's kind of an equal partnership, instead of trying to make one person pay, and that's people in their 20s.
I have one more question to ask you. So one of the other things that I wanted to mention was you don't need a bachelor's degree or a master's. You could go to school for 2 years, or you could go to a trade school if you know exactly what you want to do, and you can be just fine with life. Life can treat you just fine.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, some of the biggest job opportunities in the next 10 years are for what's called middle skills jobs. These are jobs that don't require a four-year degree, but require more than a high school diploma. We need to really be having a conversation in this country right now around what we mean by education after high school. It shouldn't just mean college.
I just saw a commercial on television over the weekend, and it was something to fix jets. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm young and if I was in college material, nor did I want to go to college, but I was interested in aviation, avionics, these sort of things. Wow. Well, just think how well you would do in the Bay Area fixing jets. You'd probably make a lot of money.
There's no doubt about it. And, I interview students in the books. I mean, the other thing is that it was always looked down upon. These students were always looked down upon. And most of the students I met in these quote-unquote trade programs, they were college-going material. They took AP courses in college. They could have gotten into college and wanted to go, in some cases, for engineering, but they just like working with their hands. And there's nothing wrong with that.
We need to
be encouraging that, not discouraging it.
Okay, fantastic conversation. I hear that you're going to go see Tom Hanks speak, so I'm jealous.
Yes, I am about to do that in L.A.
That's fantastic. All right. Did you see, Hologram for a King with him in it?
Yes. He's one of my favorite actors, and he's in a conversation with Brian Grazer, the Hollywood producer. So I think it should be an interesting conversation.
I'll let you go have it. Jeff Salingo, thank you so much. Jeff Salingo is his name, and the book is There Is Life After College. Have a good evening. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. By the way, speaking to the Hologram for a King, so this might ring one of your bells. This is basically, so Tom Hanks is 55, and he's too young to retire, but yet he's too old to get with the program of the 20-year-olds, and he feels himself stuck in the middle, and here he is in the middle of the Saudi, with the royals in the Saudi desert, trying to sell this hologram thing for a king. It's insane. It looks like a lot of fun. We'll have to ask Tim Seca about that, our movie reviewer. Oh, by the way, speaking of movie reviews, don't go see Mother's Day. Tim Seca has been doing movie reviews on this station for how long? I mean, I've been here a year and a half, 20, 30 years. He said it was the worst movie ever, ever. These artists, Julia Roberts is in this and some other big names. It was not only just take a paycheck, they didn't even act it out correctly.
No, and he said it was like sticking needles in your eyes.
Right. I almost fell off the chair here Friday night. So don't waste your money on Mother's Day. All right, that's enough. I'll take a breath. More of the Drex Radio Show on the way on KGO 810 with a look at traffic. Here's Lee Graham. Needles and pins up. That's what you get in your eye if you go to see Mother's Day. Don't say you weren't warned. My God, we were just looking at this. So Julia Roberts, Jennifer Aniston,
Kate Hudson,
and Sudeikis. Now, and Gary Marshall directed, produced, or whatever he did. It's his movie. And now you would think, okay, it's formula. I get it, Drex. It's Mother's Day, but I'm still going to take Mom. How bad can it be? No! Like I said, you know what it's going to be like if you take your mother after I warned you about this and after Tim Seca told you it's so horrific? It's going to be like your mother's going to want to think, have you all over again and drop you on your head again.
You know what my favorite thing to do about movies is? Seeing their Rotten Tomatoes score,
yes.
Because that really gives you, I think, an accurate reading of how good or bad a movie is. Mother's Day has 8%.
Okay. There 8%. It is. And see, now I'm so happy that I listen to my own show.
You're present.
Because I will be having the next week off in order to see my mother for the first time in a year. And I'm the kind of guy who would take my mother's to see Mother's Day. And then I'd be, you know, asking for some pins to put in my eyes. Yeah. Dad's welder's torch might work. All right. So it looks like a third of you would like to get the hell out of Dodge. All right. 808-0810, more than a third. I have to tell you before I read this story, you may have heard it. It's buzzing all over the country. It was on the front page of the Drudge Report. I had somebody from Alaska instant message me. I had somebody from Texas IM it to me. I had somebody from Arkansas send it to me. I think my sister from Pennsylvania sent it to me. All talking, I've got it four times today. More than a third of Bay Area residents recently polled in the Bay Area by the Bay Area Council said they're planning to leave the region as skyrocketing housing costs, terrible commutes, and increasingly high cost of living make the Bay Area very, very difficult to afford. In addition, over half of the residents polled in San Francisco County said the region was headed in the wrong decision. A massive leap from the only 28% who felt that same way last year. So it went from 28% thought it was, it's a little edgy here, it's a little expensive for my liking. The 28 last year to more than 50 this year. We need to get the hell out of here. What do you think? 808-0810. Here's my thoughts after being here for a year and a half. It's a lovely place. I call this place a beautiful disaster. When people want me to describe San Francisco, I say it's an absolute beautiful disaster. It's great if you're going to make a lot of money or if you just want to slide by. That's what Sharon and I are doing. We're just sliding by. We're cool with it. But there's no money to be saved. And I just can't imagine all of these people I keep hearing over and over. The Sunnyvale was a great example of these people who were in that mobile home park forever. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that story last week? Yeah. And, you know, now they own their mobile homes, but their rent keeps going up precipitously. It was used to be $300, then it was $500, then it's $700, then it's $900, then it's $1,100, now it's $1,200. These people can't afford that. And just like the rent, you know, trying to cap rents. You just can't, at some point, you know, when the income gives out, you're retired, or if you're trying to put your kid through school, as we were just talking about, where's this money supposed to come from? Unless you're on Snapchat, it's not Rain and Benjamins. Oh, by the way, I'm on Snapchat now. I haven't figured it out yet. I'm working on it. But I could make it rain with fake money. But but seriously, so I think it's sad. A quarter of the respondents said it's the region's most serious problem, money, with 64% saying it ranks amongst their top three highest concerns. Yes, the frustration with housing costs in traffic in lockstep. And, the poll found the millennials and Generation Xers are the most worried about the cost of living, with 33 and 31% respectively citing their primary concern. And thinking things like, you know, honey, if we have kids, we can't stay here. We have to move. We have to move. You know, it's a really crazy thing.
I know there are more dogs than kids in San Francisco. More people have dogs than children.
Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sharon and I did not have children, okay, just because we couldn't, but we didn't. But I have to think at my age now, we would be going through this college thing, as we were just discussing with my last guest, and I don't know what we would do, you know. I mean, you would almost have to move to a city that's to a Boulder or, I don't know, Eureka or something. Couldn't live here and spend $66,000 on tuition.
I hear Topeka, Kansas is cheap.
Hey, there's a lot of great places. One of the things is, this is a crazy thing. If you're listening to me, you might know this, because if you work for a corporation, if you talk to somebody who works in Charlotte, let's just play Charlotte. And we're not going to talk about bathrooms. Let's just pick Charlotte. All right. So if you talk to some, or Orlando, something like that, and you say, well, I make $100,000, and they say to you, well, I'm making $100,000, and we're just doing fine. We're just having ourselves the best time here in Charlotte. $100,000 goes a long way. We couldn't be happier. We have a big old house, big old backyard, and we're living good. Everything's good. And then you talk to somebody here, lives in the city. Well, we make $100,000 too. We can't find a studio apartment to live in.
Yeah.
We can't find 500. We can't rent 500 square feet.
You know, it's even getting that way in Oakland now, too.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's everywhere in the Bay Area.
So then, you know, you start kibitzing and you start thinking, well, why am I, you know, and then, for instance, if you work for the same company and you even hear these stories, well, I work for, you know, Dad Bell in Savannah. I work for Dad Bell, and Dad Bell pays $100,000 in Savannah, and we live in large. We like it. Well, I'm working for Dad Bell over here. I'm doing the same job, but it pays the same thing. It pays $100,000. Well, no, that doesn't compute. Your Dad Bell over here should be paying you $150 or $175, because that's what it takes for you to have the same quality of life that the Dad Bell in Savannah costs. Comprende, everybody? Does this make sense to you, or am I crazy? I mean, this is why people want to dodge and skip town. It's a real damn shame. God, and the other thing I always have to say to people about the Bay is I love it. I mean, what's not to love about how gorgeous it is, and it's beautiful in 72 degrees, and the people are so nice, and all of these great things. And then the other thought that I always end with is, look, there's a reason that California is expensive, because everybody wants to be here. Who wouldn't want to live here? But can you? All right. 808-0810. Do we have time for a call? I've got a minute, Jennifer. Let me see if I can punch her up here. Jennifer, we got a minute. Let's roll.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My comment is I've been born and raised here. My mom and dad told me from practically out of the birth canal, start saving for a house. And that's what all four of us kids did. They raised four of us. My mom stayed at home. My dad worked as a milkman, and we managed to make it. But it's a mindset. And I would say that we have gotten ours early on, but I've invested in real estate with a business partner, and I've eaten peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to do it. So I don't live high on the hog. I parse out my money, and I meter it, and if you want it badly enough, you'll get it. And I know it's really tough here in Sonoma County making a living and affording a housing cost and rent. But
you're right. But you're right. I mean, the key is to own the home. So if you have the ability to own the home now, then that is what you want to do. I mean, even we're thinking about this now. Instead of sending somebody $5,000 a month every rent, for rent, with all due respect and love, and please don't take the house away. We'll continue on the drive.